With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blaim.
Hello and welcome to the second part of the podcast with Wes Bam. Now, I don't know if you've listened to the other podcasts, but if you have, you might remember the one with Martin Ware of Heaven 17, where he talked about growing up in Sheffield, and how Sheffield and the sound of the clang of steel in the local steel industry in that town influenced him. Well, with West Bam, it's another city which was pivotal to his success, the then walled city of Berlin.
One thing Nick Cave said about Berlin is that he gave him the confidence to do what he wanted to do and not give a shit about what other people think. Did Berlin have that?
I think that is the thing that Berlin has always had and still has today. I think, and now now that I'm a little older and more wise, I'd say that story begins way before the 60s. That story begins probably with Friedrich der Große, that Prussian king, who probably was a gay guy, who kind of like had this kind of also this idea. Well, you know, everybody should live the way they want to. And he has this very famous quotation, jeder soll nach seiner Fasson glücklich werden. So, and that kind of like, then he had all these people that were persecuted in France, the Huguenots, these people for their religion and their beliefs. Said, well, join me here in Prussia. You can do it. And he invited Voltaire to his court. And so he was kind of like, by the same time, he founded the tradition of German militarism, which eventually led to that incredible military power that started World Wars. But then again, he was, in a good way, the founder of this come to Berlin and live and be happy the way you want to be happy, you know? So that's quite contradictory traditions that I think he founded.
William sort of opened doors for you, but he also, clearly, you had this potential to do things and to take risks and do different things, and including writing an article where you described what the future of the DJ would be and what the future of cover art as being art. Can you tell us about that?
Well, here comes another story. There was, you know, I talked about my early drawings in the political far left alternative press. One of those guys was like living in Frankfurt, a Latvian guy named Indulis Bildzens. And he was kind of like a impresario to William, and he liked William. And William brought me in. And kind of like Indulis always stuck around, and he had quite an influence as well on William and also on me. And in fact, you know, that what I'm very happy now that this manifesto at the time was released, I had written it for myself, only for myself, and I had forgotten it in William's car. Now this guy Indulis found it, and he said, "Wow, that sounds interesting. A DJ as the musician of the future that plays a more minimal kind of really underground music, and it will be the pop music of the future, but also the underground of the future." Mind you, like in 84, you didn't have techno or house or any of that. You know, you had disco and you had new wave disco, but you didn't have the idea. Also, you had hip hop, but hip hop was about the rapper and stuff. But the idea that the DJ himself would become the artist, that was kind of revolutionary. To me, it came natural because, as I say, from my parents' background, whatever you do is kind of art. So for me to see my DJing as an art form was easier than for other guys. You know, for them, it was a job. They would talk about, next month this record will be big, and and I will program this, and I will, you know, and look at the record reviews, and well, you know, and talk to my boss about the next beach party and all of that crap, you know. So in that world that I came into, the disco world, you know, all these ideas at the time were completely new and alien, but I didn't look for anybody to release this text of mine, but Indulis found it in the car, read it, and said, "Oh wow, this like a manifesto." We have to, and he gave it to a friend of his who had at the time an avant-garde newspaper called Der Neger, and they it was them that kind of like brought it to the public audience.
And it was also under Westphalia Bambata, wasn't it?
Yes,
so
exactly.
So right. This is obviously Westphalia, the part of Germany where you're from, where Munster is, and Bambata from Africa, Bambata. And this is where your name, Westbam, came from. But a change of name, I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning, my real name is Stephen James, and my stage name, which I changed to be on MTV, was Steve Blame. And I've had a ton of therapy in my life. And when I talk to therapists, they always say that when you change your name, you develop a second personality. So you have a different personality. So I have a different personality to Steve Blame, which I think is the one that gets into trouble. And we'll talk about that nightclub a bit later.
And
what happened?
Gets all the blame for it.
It gets the blame for it. Yes, exactly. And so
you're a psychologist.
Exactly. So who is Westbam in relation to Maximilian Lenz?
Yeah, well, kind of like Westbam is funny. It's really a name that developed. Kind of like when I came to Berlin, you know, people in West Berlin, at the time there was no Aussies around. Well, they were around, but behind the wall somewhere, you know, hidden. So people would always blame the West Germans. So the worst word in West Berlin was Wessies, you know. That was a bad word because Aussies, they didn't get bothered by Aussies, but by those West German tourists. So for me, again, that's my anti-authorian thing to say, like, well, I come from Westphalia. So I put the West in my name even, you know. that was kind of a provocation at the time. So when I started playing at the Metropole, which was the big gay club in Berlin, again, that was another big underground that you didn't have. Probably worldwide, you didn't have such a big and quite crass gay scene as that scene in Berlin at the time. When I played there, I changed my name from Westphalia Bambaataa to, at first I was West Bam with a B at the end, and then it changed to West Bam, you know? And that, yeah, well, it's kind of a weird name, I guess, you know? And I'm not even sure, you know, I think at the time it was not clear to me, but clear from my name, I would never have a career in the West, but rather in the East, because West sounds good to the East, more than to the West, yeah? So, and it sounds, I realize, like, when Americans hear that name, they're like, oh, that's a weird name. They prefer somebody we call Paul van Dyk or Armin van Buuren, you know? That's names. So, so you kind of, when you give yourself a name, I think unconsciously you decide upon your faith to some extent, you know? And I'm not upset at all, you know, because deep in my heart, also being a historic person, I always thought I could do better in the East than in the West world, you know? And until today, I think the heart of rave music beats more in the East than in the West.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
I think I want to come to one point that actually connects to that, because the 80s for me in Britain, which is very different from in Berlin, but the 80s for me in Britain were really dominated by, you know, it's unemployment, social unrest, homophobia, sexism, misogyny. Yeah. It was, you know, there was a pile of shit going on. Yeah. And at the same time, there was an absolute amazing amount of great music during the early 80s. Yeah, when you came to the late 80s, and then, you know, acid house and techno and all these different, I think they're sort of lifestyle genres came into being. They change the society, or they came at the time that society was changing. Now, you played, you know, as you just mentioned, in the Metropole, you played in a gay club. And in part of the 80s, and I remember that, in the early 80s, I felt comfortable as a gay man in gay clubs. Yeah. In the late 80s, it was okay to go to, you know, a techno house, whatever, a warehouse type event where they played that sort of music. Mm-hmm. And it was very mixed, and it was very much more of a sort of what we see today as a modern society where we're all together and we don't just identify into our little groups. How was that in Berlin, and how did that relate to East and West?
Yeah, well, that kind of like is very interesting, because at the time I realized the Metropole, when before I started DJing, and I was just a pupil away in the west of West Berlin, my classmates would rave about the Metropole. So the Metropole was, although it was a gay club, at the time it already had a cult following of straight people. Kind of like the gay crowd was like the host, and was their music and their culture, but it had kind of clicked onto a weird kind of smaller crowd of suburban teenage people who kind of like this kind of larger, this posing, this the gay thing, the and like myself, the energy, you know. So I think Berlin was one of the places. I remember my girlfriend at the time said to me, are you gay? That was the first time I heard it in Münster. I never heard anybody talk about gay people. It was a more normal thing. Like, gay people were more a part of it. And the question wasn't critical or anything. It was just for interest, you know? I think that the divide wasn't as deep in Berlin because Berlin, everybody should be happy the way they're happy. That was the vibe always. So the divide between gay and straight people wasn't as bad as it was in most other places, I believe. And that kind of translated into, you know, then in the mid-80s, we had this Macht der Nacht kind of where I started playing house music. And on the record night, we had 8,000 people. West Berlin was empty. They were all in our tent, you know. And I played this music that there wasn't a scene for house music or for techno-ish beats. But from the Metropole days, there was a school of that kind of energy that it felt, you know. And I always saw house techno in the high energy disco tradition, you know, and basically that kind of like developed from, especially for example in Chicago, from this black gay ghetto thing translated into a more major crowd. And then, you know, the girls would come, and when the girls come after a while, you know, the boys come. And so the kind of like it, that music in a open, and that whole culture starting with a gay culture, yeah, helped to change society, I believe.
You mentioned before also about changing society.
One little, I'm running out of energy. I need to get
okay,
my
power up.
Can I get it?
Yep, okay. Power up.
One second.
No, I'm going to leave you running. That's what we do on this podcast.
Okay, now we're safe. Okay.
We're back on again, are we? Okay, good.
We're back on, yeah.
Yeah, what I wanted to say is that you mentioned earlier about the work you did in, you know, inverted commas, for the German government, for the West, yeah, in terms of, you know, bringing down the wall and bringing societies together. But it's not a joke, is it, really? It's something that really is fundamentally true, that played a role. Can you also explain what role that played and what connection did it make to the young people in the East at that time behind the Iron Curtain?
Yeah, well, that part, you know, I always had the tendency to believe music can do something so like in a political way. And the best thing music can do is free your mind. You know, the best music frees your mind. So even in 87, you remember Gorbachev and Perestroika. Due to Indulis Bilsins, who was Latvian, at the time was a part of the Soviet Union, we got this invitation to play in Russia, not Russia, Soviet Union. Latvia wasn't Russia, Soviet Union. So
was that in Riga?
That's Riga. Yeah. And that's a legendary gig. And we did like two or even three events at the time. And in those days, I mean, that they were testing, what can we do now? Is Perestroika about opening up? And I was a little part of that in Riga, because they were like looking for their kind of freedom from, and hoping to be able to break away from Soviet Union at the time, which eventually happened. But at the time, they were still a part of it. And then again, there was a Russian group from Riga who saw me perform from St. Petersburg. They were called Pop Mechanics. And they performed that night in Riga and they saw me. And then we did a gig together. They asked me and they said, yeah, that's great, scratching and, you know, mixing stuff. So I was mixing Zig Sputnik into that Russian band live on stage and so on. So so that's only to say, yeah, well, kind of like that whole changing the world to me by music took place again more in the East than in the West. You know, in West Germany, West Berlin, in America, you have a lot of trends and they go by and they something, you know, but that music at that very special time.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm not saying, you know, that brought down the wall, but did something that is over the average of what pop music usually does, you know? And to come back to Berlin, well, there were all these radio shows on Senderfreies Berlin, you know? The free, you know, the transmitting from the West right into the East, you know, and all these kids in East Berlin would listen to these shows and they would fantasize about that, you know, the little club that I took you to in 89 before the war came down, UFO, you know, which happened, as you might remember, to be quite empty at the time, you know, but for the East German kids, that was a place that they would dream to one day, maybe, but they wouldn't even hope to dream. They could join that and, you know, dance to acid music and be really crazy and free, whereas they live under this oppressive system that holds them down and keeps them away from it. But so, like, that kind of like craving for it, that was the root was planted with the music, with the radio shows, obviously. And well, and the proof of what I say is that after the coming weekends, after the wall came down, the UFO suddenly burst, you know, was bursting with people. It was like overcrowded, you know, before in 89, you know, there had been Acid and ATA that had been on the cover of Bravo, and it was like kind of like a major kind of pop trend, even in Germany and England even more. But kind of there was, in West Berlin, there was going down, you know, was on the way out, you know, because there was no real use for it, you know. And it was just, yeah, you could dance to that, but we could listen to Minnesota funk and dance to Prince. Wouldn't that be a good idea now, you know? And it was only for those East German kids that suddenly overcrowded the UFO, that kind of techno culture in Berlin developed a whole new logic, you know, because at that point, it was not just a fad from last year that was on the way out. Now it's a point of craving and of fantasizing and of this new music that's so much different from anything in East Germany, you know, that's not about songs, that's not state control, that's not not the old, you know, not even the East German protest songs with the old guitar going blah, blah, blah. It was just the future. It was electronic. It was super Western. And kind of that, all these dreams and hopes of these kids, you know, as I've said a million times, but still true, all these hopes and these dreams and these like almost like children that, you know, a door is open and there's like this magic wonderland behind it. And now it's all open up and the game starts all over and everywhere it's glittering and it's freedom and it's future. And it's all right, and it's love, peace, and it's progress, and it's democracy, and it's liberalism, and it's no state control no more. Kind of the music got loaded with that, you know, and that's, you know.
I remember being in Berlin when after the wall came down. I was there just before, I think that was our night, which was not long before, and I was there afterwards, and there was this very anti the East feeling when people saw the people from the East come over in what they were wearing with these washed-out denims and how they were with their, you know, horrendous 70s haircuts and God knows what. But the point of contact between the two people, as it were, of the two peoples between East and West, was in these clubs, wasn't it? This was the point of contact. This is where they actually did mix and where there was some relation started between East and West. And I think that was massively important.
I agree to that 100%. And even it was a nice mix because, like, kind of the music and most of the DJs at the time came from West Berlin, but the energy, the people came from East Berlin. It was in their locations, Haus der Jungen Talente, and, you know, what they always say, you know, warehouses, empty ones in East Berlin. That's one thing I hate about, like, the West, the Western look at the techno revolution. They always say, well, they had these empty houses in East Berlin, you know, as if it was about empty houses, you know. It was full houses, and these kids were the East Berlin kids, and it kind of, I learned from that, you know, because I saw this new kind of energy and kind of like, because this was what I was all about all the time, you know, kind of like free your mind, take the music, and do something wild, revolutionize it, make it more crazy, take the energy, take it over the top. And kind of like, I had a little, you know, like Berlin was also, West Berlin was one of the best places for it, you know, but it wasn't until the wall came down where it was taken to a whole new level. And this is about the people of East Berlin rather than about the empty houses of East Berlin, you know? Because, mind you, there were lots of empty houses in West Berlin as well, you know? Because Berlin, West Berlin, you know, didn't have any jobs. That's kind of like what made West Berlin fun, you know? It would only attract more or less useless people like myself, you know? You know, all these gay people and people who didn't want to go to the army. Whereas when you're a West Berliner, you know, you would go to West Germany to be a dentist or whatever, you know, so all the reasonable people left and all the scum like myself would go there, you know? So, kind of like that kind of, and okay, these people who were there kind of were like very arrogant. So, like, as I say, when the war was up, the bad word was Wessies from West Germany. Now, when the war came down, that you had a whole, for the West Berliner, you had a whole new tribe of bad people. That was the East Aussies, you know? So, but I wouldn't take that personally against the Aussies, because the West Berliners hated the Wessies as well, you know? So that's a little bit like English mentality, you know? Don't worry about it. Yes, of course we hate you, but we hate anybody anyway, you know? You know? Never mind we hate Germans, we hate the French, and we hate the Italians, and we hate the Spanish too, you know?
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Back in that era, and this refers to that, you know, one of those nights we went out and got completely smashed. Back in that era, the when you went to a club, there was you went there for the DJ, for the music, and to get completely smashed and to have absolute fun to the extreme. And you went there with a sort of open mind about how the music would be. I don't think you had a sort of closed mind in any way. It was just like, you're going to go with it and see what comes. But it was really about having fun and you know, taking drugs and just going completely mad. And the best evening was the one where you went as wild as possible, because they're the ones that you can talk about later. On the night that we had, I just come to that and the difference to today. But on the night that we had, I remember being there with you and Fabian, DJ Dick, your brother, and we decided to have a competition who could take the most drugs in one night.
Oh, yeah. Remember that? What's that the plan? I mean, that was the plan.
I don't think it was a plan.
It was an agenda.
It was an agenda. I have to say, I won. I remember I won and I had to go. You two went off home.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
You were bowing down to me, and I had to go off to the wall and present a piece to camera for MTV at the wall. And I remember I had these dark glasses on, and I just couldn't get my words out. It took ages to do something that normally takes about 3 seconds. Anyhow, I mean, we're talking about it like older people do who had that experience. Yeah, we're laughing. We're finding it fun. It's back then, but it's with, you know, don't have any problem with it. It happened. There's a complete different mentality today about going to a club and listening to music and going to see a DJ. Can you tell me what the difference is?
Well, I guess there's a million differences, and kind of obviously nothing is everything becomes, you know, so like it's hard to say. And for me, you know, to even judge, you know, there's a couple of things that I would say. Well, kind of now it's changing. But for example, in the after the 90s, how do you call this? I call it the zeros. You
know, the noughties.
The noughties, the zeros between 2001 and 2001 and 2009. That era, people kind of like turned because, you know, these were the minimal days when people sobered up, and kind of even from the East German kids, kind of like the illusion of that complete wonder world, the glittering where everybody's free and happy, and the drugs and the dancing and the raving society and the place behind the rainbow or whatever, you know, all of that kind of like had shown that it's, you know, the world wouldn't change completely, you know, but the same problems are still there and stuff. And people were kind of like frustrated, and especially when that 9/11 thing happened, the whole mentality changed. And with that came, you know, the beginning of the Berghain era and all that kind of like, now we don't want to go naked on the love raid. And like Motta said, we are going to be one mankind because everybody's going to be here at the love raid, and we're all going to get naked and dance to techno music and be happy about the future. Suddenly you had these people saying, oh, not everybody in the world loves us. Not everybody wants to be progressive. Liberalism might be a good thing for us, but other people would rather hide their women and dress up to the eyes, you know? And from that very same kind of mindset came a club like the club scene in that era, that kind of suddenly was not about we're inviting everybody and we have this great rave signal to unify us behind this idea, but suddenly it was like we want to keep the world out. It kind of was a little bit again like the old West Berlin, who wanted to be a little world and not be bothered by the problems and not be bothered by Aussies or Vessies or by tourists who just want to be there among themselves and be quiet and not even promote West Berlin because you wouldn't want anybody to come anyway. You know? So it's kind of like that became the vibe in that decade to come, and kind of like people, yeah, sobered up in a lot of ways. And I realized, you know, in that today's has changed again, but in that decade, people like us were like very much the has-beens that would get, you know, that would like go out and get drunk or, you know, and people, I on social network, you read, he had like 3 drinks at his DJ table. What kind of working ethos is that, you know? It was, yeah, serious. I couldn't believe it. I said, like, yeah, this kind of like, yeah, we want to keep a good crowd. We want to be among ourselves. We want the DJ to do a proper job. Well, and so on. That was kind of like, okay, Berghain was different. Berghain kind of still was the flag of we want to get naked. But a lot of the techno culture in other ways were like more this kind of, you know, ideals that, for example, Paul Van Dyk lived up to, you know, kind of like techno is a clean thing and you are politically correct and you want to do a positive music and you dress up and fashionable stuff and you go to a party and listen to a DJ and you make yourself reasonable ideas about the future and plans and you be that type of like straight up person, you know? And kind of like over the last kind of years and especially now, well, after the corona times, I'm hesitant now to say, but because we're still in the corona times. But when clubs kind of like first open up again, I felt this energy and it made me, for example, play a lot harder because again, I realized, yeah, wow, this is cool. You know, the kids want want something more energetic and harder again because of all the pressure and all the energy that's gotten held down for such a long time now, you know? And there's a logic for this new type of energy kicks in. And I hope the next couple of years, you know, now I'll make a prediction again, you know, this kind of new energetic and more, again, social and open up and meet everybody and be open to a lot of newbies and new people that I think and I hope, but we'll, once we get over that corona thing, which I hope in one way or another we will at some point, that would be my dream, but also my prediction for the next 10 years, you know?
Okay, Max, listen, yeah. It was great to see you again. It's great to see you looking so good and so fit.
Cheerio.
And well, especially,
my,
you know,
low carb diet, man.
Oh, is it? Well, I think I need
back
one.
Back in the days, it was drugs. Now it's low carb. You know, back in the days, it was groupies. Now it's securities. But hey, we'll never stop living this way.
And that's it for this interview with Westbam. If you liked this, I'm sure you'd also like the Martin Ware from Heaven 17 interview, where he talks about Sheffield as having a massive impact on his life. So have a listen to that. Or take a dive into something a little different. A raw and wonderfully emotional interview with Sam Brown. I'll see you soon.
Trying to grab all the groceries in one trip? Oof, not how you would have done that. You know sometimes less is more. Like when you drive less and save with the USAA annual mileage discount. USAA, get a quote today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.